The headlines: Russia says its forces are observing the unilateral 36-hour truce ordered by President Putin, blaming Ukrainians for reported shelling. The UN Security Council stresses the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after an Israeli minister visited the site in occupied Al-Quds. And also, China urges the U.S. to stop escalating tensions after an American warship sailed through the Taiwan Strait. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Russia and Ukraine blame each other for continued attacks on eastern Ukrainian cities amid a unilateral ceasefire announced by Moscow. Ukrainian officials say Russian forces struck the cities of Kramatorsk to the east and Kherson to the south of the country. Moscow, however, says Russian troops have been fully respecting the ceasefire and accused Ukraine's forces of continued shelling. The 36-hour ceasefire, which began on Friday, was called by President Vladimir Putin with the stated goal of stopping the fighting during the Orthodox Christmas. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has rejected the truce, describing it as a ploy by Russia to bolster its defenses. The U.S. president was also dismissive. Russia has accused Washington of showing no drive to find a political solution to the Ukraine war. Moscow has repeatedly said it's open to negotiations to end the conflict, while Ukraine says Russia must withdraw its forces first. Well, the International Monetary Fund has warned that a third of the global economy will go into recession this year. The IMF says that would happen because of three big economies, the US, EU, and China, are all slowing down. The organization says that hundreds of millions of people would be affected globally.
The head of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva, has issued a dire warning over the economic outlook in 2023, saying that this year is going to be even tougher than the year 2022. That is because the U.S., EU, and Chinese economies have slowed down. The Ukraine conflict, soaring prices, and hiked interest rates, and the rise of the COVID have contributed to the slowdown in the global economy. She also said that a third of the world economy will be hit by a recession in 2023.
For most of the world economy, this is going to be a tough year, tougher than the year we leave behind. Why? Because the three big economies, U.S., EU, China, are all slowing down simultaneously. Half of the European Union will be in recession next year. China is going to slow down this year further. Next year would be a tough year for China. Mm-hmm. And that translates into negative trends globally.
Back in October, the IMF slashed its outlook for global economic growth in 2023. It blamed the gloomy outlook on the ongoing conflict in Ukraine and tougher monetary policies. According to Georgieva, China will face a very difficult start to the year 2023. That's because it is likely to grow at or below global growth for the first time in 40 years, she said.
China has slowed down dramatically in 2022 because of this tight zero-COVID policy. For the first time in 40 years, China's growth in 2022 is likely to be at or below global growth. That has never happened before. And looking into next year, for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, the relaxation of COVID restrictions would mean bushfire COVID cases throughout China.
Back in October, the IMF cut its outlook for global economic growth in 2023. It did so due to the Ukraine war as well as higher interest rates as central banks around the world sought to tame rising prices. Inflation has been steadily rising across the globe, causing public discontent in many places, including Europe.
She also said that the U.S. economy may avoid a recession, but warned a strong labor market there may lead the U.S. Federal Reserve to keep interest rates tight so as to combat high inflation, which could have negative economic consequences of its own. The IMF warning comes amid similar predictions by other institutions. UK-based Center for Economics and Business Research has said that the global slide into a recession next year, as a number of economies will contract due to surging borrowing costs introduced to combat inflation. K. Daniel Neufeld said, "We expect central bankers to stick to their guns in 2023, despite the economic costs. The cost of bringing inflation down to more comfortable levels is a poorer growth outlook for a number of years to come." The report is more pessimistic than the most recent forecast by the International Monetary Fund. Meanwhile, oil prices continue to slide, weighed down by China's rising COVID cases and a recession warning from the IMF. The warning comes amid a worsening economic crisis in developed nations. Just recently, Germany's Federal Statistical Office said that the country is grappling with its highest annual inflation in more than 70 years. According to official data, full-year inflation reached 7.9% in 2022 amid surging energy and food prices. The last time annual inflation was near that level was in the year 1951, when it stood at 7.6% as the post-war economic boom began. And the UK faces one of the worst recessions among the world's leading industrialized nations this year.
We're not the government. We haven't been in power for 12 years. Right, every aspect of society that's been impacted by government policy. 10 years of austerity, cuts to the economy, slowing growth, a badly handled Brexit, whatever your view on Brexit was, right, has all led to where we are today. But the fact that we've got so many people out on strike and so many people suffering, only the government can change it, or a change of government can change it.
The fallout from spiraling inflation triggered by the pandemic and the Ukraine conflict will persist for longer in the UK than in other G7 nations, and the country's recovery will be one of the weakest.
The start of the new year has marked the resumption of public sector strikes in the UK. More than 12,000 train drivers across 15 companies have walked off their jobs in an ongoing dispute with the government over pay and conditions in what's been dubbed Tragic Thursday. Said Puduzo reports from London.
St. Pancras Station, one of London's biggest and busiest, but not today. A 48-hour strike by train drivers, preceded by another 48-hour walkout by other rail workers, have meant travel misery for thousands. The dispute between ASLEF and the RMT Rail Workers Union on the one hand, and the employer Network Rail and train operating companies on the other, is largely over pay and the impact of inflation on workers' wages. The disagreements have kept a deal elusive for months.
Well, we want to hear movement on the issue about some of the conditions they've put down in Network Rail. That's a restructuring of all our members' terms and conditions. And it's a similar recipe in the train operating companies. They've gone for a thing called driver-only operation, which we think is extremely unhelpful. We can't accept that. And, of course, we'd like an improvement in the pay offers.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has so far refused to meet with the unions to try and hammer out a deal and has instead vowed to get tough on the strikes. His government is also accused of trying to turn public opinion against the strikers. But there's no sign of that happening yet.
I think workers are well within their rights to demand at least living wages to be kept in line with inflation. I'm fully supportive of this.
I really sympathize. I think they're right. So I'm not mad. It's inconvenient.
The UK economy is experiencing the combined effects of Brexit, the war in Ukraine, and its effect on energy costs, as well as inflationary pressure on the post-pandemic recovery. And rail workers are not the only ones complaining.
ASLEF and the RMT are two of the UK's most powerful unions, able to bring their railway service to a standstill during industrial disputes. And the concerns they have been raising about the difference between people's pay packets and the cost of living at the moment are shared by many different industries and professions.
Nurses, ambulance drivers, teachers, postal workers, driving examiners and the like all have pay deals with the government in the pipelines and are likely to be offered less than the rate of inflation. And that means the UK's winter of discontent is likely to drag on. Saeed Puruza, London.
Well, the UK's Prince Harry has for the first time acknowledged killing 25 people when he was a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan. In his autobiography, Prince Harry says he undertook 6 missions as a pilot that led him to, quote, take human lives. He compared the killings to removing chess pieces from aboard. The 38-year-old Duke of Sussex justified his actions because of his memory of the 9/11 attacks in U.S. Harry has described his time in the military as his formative years. He's resigned from his royal duties and has since been critical of the royal family. U.S.-led forces invaded Afghanistan in 2001 and occupied the country for more than two decades. Tens of thousands of Afghans were killed in the war, and the country remains in turmoil even after the withdrawal of the foreign forces. Israel has announced new measures against Palestinians in response to their appeal at the International Court of Justice. The Israeli Prime Minister's office said the regime will impose a moratorium on some Palestinian construction. It also announced financial and political sanctions against the Palestinian Authority. The office said the measures were a response to the PA's decision to wage political and legal war against Israel. Last week, the UN General Assembly approved the Palestinians' request for an advisory opinion from the ICJ on Israel's 55-year occupation of the West Bank. And the UN Security Council has met following a provocative visit by an Israeli minister to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They voiced concern about the status quo of the holy site, but failed to take action against the Israeli regime. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's see what our guests had to say about that.
Sign up for our news review segments, where we take a look at one of our stories in a little bit more detail. The U.S. Security Council has voiced concern over the status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after a far-right Israeli minister visited the site and occupied Al-Quds earlier this week.
On 3rd January, Israel's new Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, conducted a visit accompanied by heavy security detail to the holy site in Jerusalem. The visit was the first to the site by an Israeli minister since 2017. While the visit was not accompanied or followed by violence, it is seen as particularly inflammatory given Mr. Ben-Gvir's past advocacy for changes to the status quo.
Security Council members reaffirmed the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They met on Thursday as anger boils among Palestinians over the Israeli minister's visit. They see such visits as provocations aimed at turning the mosque into a Jewish temple. And that's because the decades-old status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound allows only Muslims to worship there. Palestinians want the Security Council to take action.
What red line does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? When are you going to act? It has displayed utter disregard for the sanctity of Palestinian life, the sanctity of international law, and the sanctity of Al-Haram al-Sharif. It does so with absolute contempt.
The Palestinian envoy also said Israel's actions have nothing to do with religious freedom and aim to change the identity of Al-Aqsa. Israel's envoy to the UN was also present at the Security Council meeting. Gilad Erdan defended the minister's visit to Al-Aqsa, saying it was in line with the status quo. The U.S., meanwhile, voiced concern over unilateral acts that increased tensions. The Israeli minister's visit sparked anger from other countries, including Muslim nations as well. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest place in Islam. Joining us for this edition of the News Review is Ghada Karmi, a Palestinian activist and writer from London. Welcome, Ghada. If I could start with you, what's your thoughts on this? The Palestinian ambassador did ask, what red lines does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? Are there any red lines?
Well, to be honest, I have to say there aren't any. You know, Israel is guided by its past history and the past history of dealings with the Security Council, United Nations, United States, you name it. And this history has consistently shown that whatever Israel does, or has done rather, to date, has never been sanctioned or prevented at all. Despite the condemnation, despite all these fine words, Israel knows very well that it will not face sanction or punishment for what it does. And, you know, the other point I want to make is, why the shock and surprise? What is this play acting? To my mind, this is like a charade. There's nothing surprising about what Israel does. We know that it has, since 1967, since the June War of 1967, which was the start of Israel's occupation and then annexation of Jerusalem, Israel has behaved with total impunity. It's dug up all sorts of sensitive historical places. It has consistently tried to take over Islamic monuments and has always got away with it.
Let me thank our guest. Yes. Ghada Karimi is a Palestinian activist and writer joining us from London. And that brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
China rebukes the United States for a sailing warship through the Taiwan Strait, calling on Washington to immediately stop undermining peace and stability in the region. The reaction was made by the Chinese embassy in Washington. It said China is ready to respond to all threats and protect its sovereignty and territorial integrity. On Thursday, the guided missile destroyer USS Chung-hoon sailed through the Taiwan Strait. Washington says a passage is part of its commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific. Beijing sees a move in line with Washington's frequent shows of muscle flexing in the South China Sea. The two sides have been at odds over the Taiwan Strait and Taiwan itself for years now. China regards the self-ruled island as part of its territory. It's opposed to the U.S.'s growing nexus with Taiwan. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The school of thought of Iranian anti-terror commander and hero Martyr Qasem Soleimani is intertwined with resistance, which is the main front in the face of the global arrogance and hegemonic powers. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Mehr News Agency wrote in this regard, the theory of regional security is one of the most important viewpoints of Martyr Soleimani, who developed the theory due to his understanding of Western politics and with the purpose of preventing their plot from being fulfilled. On the basis of this theory, the security of West Asian Islamic countries influences and is connected to one another. In other words, insecurity in Syria would undermine Iraq's security, and insecurity in Iraq would jeopardize Iranian security. In order to ensure West Asian security and counteract Western plots, Sardar Soleimani developed the resistance model and molded the fight against extremism and terrorism on the basis of developing the resistance strategy. In fact, Qasem Soleimani preempted the Westerners' plans. They were trying to create discord in the anti-Zionist camp, but Martyr Soleimani united those countries under the axis of resistance. Haj Qasem's miracle was that he placed seven nationalities, the Syrians, the Lebanese, the Iranians, the Pakistanis, the Afghans, and the Iraqis under the umbrella of resistance. He shaped the axis of resistance by benefiting from the native identity and culture of every country, not by imposing the Iranian culture and version on them. Hezbollah with the Lebanese identity, Hashd al-Sha'bi with the Iraqi identity, the Zainabiyun, Fatimiyun, Haydariyun forces with their own respective national and local identities were created, and then they achieved growth. With his regional security theory, Martyr Soleimani made every country sensitive about ensuring their own national security and that of their neighboring countries. The axis of resistance foiled the Western plot to change the regional geography and to ensure the Zionist regime security. As an outstanding figure of resistance and as a symbol of fighting against terrorism, he stayed by the side of Sunni Palestinians in the 51-day war, and in the 33-day war, he defeated the Zionist regime along the Shia forces of Hezbollah. While Syria was in the depth of a crisis, he personally rushed to help Bashar al-Assad, and while Baghdad was on the brink of downfall, he passed through the Daesh forces and arrived in Baghdad and led the anti-terrorist operation until he achieved the desired results. With the help of altruistic and self-sacrificing forces of resistance, General Soleimani defended the national authority and territorial integrity of regional countries and rekindled hope in the hearts of regional nations by tightening his grip on the Zionist regime and his Western and Arab supporters. During the imposed Iraqi war on Iran, which was launched in 1980 and lasted for 8 years, Soleimani gradually became known as an adept commander, leading Iranian troops in numerous battles against invading Baath regime forces. Later, appointed as the chief of the IRGC's expeditionary quotes for Soleimani gradually became a forefront figure in Iran's push to assist regional states and allies counter foreign-backed interventions in the region. As foreign-backed Takfiri outfits feared their heads in recent years, the IRGC commander emerged as a key strategist and ingenuous commander, leading Iranian military advisors, assisting Syrian and Iraqi troops in battles against terrorists. The general was frequently pictured on the front lines during anti-terrorism operations from Iraq's Mosul to Syria's Aleppo. In Iraq, at the height of Daesh terror campaign, he assisted the Baghdad government in operations to retake the strategic oil-rich city of Tikrit from Daesh in 2015. In January 2015, the head of Iraq's Badr organization credited Tehran and Soleimani with saving Baghdad when Daesh first unleashed its campaign of terror in the neighboring country a year earlier. The general also took personal command of the battle against Takfiri terrorists in the Syrian city of Bu Kamal, located in Deir ez-Zor province, in November 2017. On January 3, 2020, General Soleimani was assassinated near Baghdad airport alongside al-Mohandes, deputy leader of the Popular Mobilization Forces, otherwise known as Hashd al-Sha'bi. A top Iranian general was visiting Iraq at the invitation of Iraq's leader to deliver an Iranian reply to a Saudi message through Iraq. He left Tehran for Baghdad on January 3, 2020, and arrived at midnight at Baghdad airport, where al-Mohandes was waiting to receive him. After a short exchange of greetings, the two men left the airport, but as they moved out of the airport in their motorcade, they were targeted with a number of missiles launched by an American drone. Former U.S. President Donald Trump had ordered the attack, which faced opposing reactions inside the United States as well. In July 2020, a UN expert said the U.S. attack that killed the top Iranian general violated the international law. According to Press TV, even today, many find it astonishing that the Gaza underground tunnels, which are approximately 360 kilometers long, were one of the strategies devised by Martyr Soleimani and Martyr Emad Mughniyeh. Ultimately, leading the axis of resistance against Daesh terrorist group was Martyr Soleimani's main action against the schemes of Arrogant Front. Martyr Soleimani and his companions uprooted this evil force and restored security and peace to regional nations. Martyr Soleimani's role in eliminating Daesh was so significant and pivotal that even American media outlets such as Newsweek, Business Insider, The Week, and others acknowledged it over the years. Also, whether American officials tried to give themselves the credit for the elimination of Daesh whenever and wherever, they faced rebuttals from international experts on the issue, pointing to the efforts of Martyr Soleimani. Professor Arshin Adib Mughaddam of the University of London, for example, in response to Trump's attempts to give himself credit for destroying Daesh, asserted that it was Iran, along with Russian air power, that dealt the decisive blows to the terrorist group, and Qasem Soleimani was the mastermind. In today's West Asia, the decline of the U.S. regime is palpable and openly spoken about based on the reality on the ground. This change and growth in regional countries and the people's outlook is the result of the resistant front's struggles against global colonialism and arrogance. And without a doubt, Martyr Soleimani was and will remain among the most prominent figures of the resistance movement.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I would like to very briefly, talk about the importance of family life in Islam. Islam is a religion which deals with the nature of the human beings. A very famous hadith, you must have heard it many times, but anyway, this is a narration from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, where he says once a person came to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And he asked him a question. He says, Man abarru? To whom should I be good? To whom should I do something, good or kind? And Rasulullah gives a very short answer. Ummuka, your mother. So then he repeats, ثم من, then who? Again Rasulullah says, Ummuk, your mother. Then again he says, ثم من, then who? Again Rasulullah says, ثم أمك, your mother. But this person was not going to leave it alone, you know. Follow up again, fourth time, ثم من. And that is where Rasulullah says, Abaka, your father. You know, somebody said it in a very beautiful way. He said, you know, Rasulullah gave the gold, silver, and bronze to the mother, and the consolation prize was given to the father. The way the Prophet is talking about here is emphasizing, you know, when we look at this Risalatul Huquq of our fourth Imam, you know, the way he talks about the right of the mother, talking on a moral level, he says, remember, you should know and ta'alam annaha hamalatka haythu la yahtamil yahtamilu ahadun ahada. She carried you in a way no one carries anyone else during the pregnancy. وَعَاتَتْكَ مِنْ ثَمَرَةِ قَلْبِهَا مَا لَا يُعْتِي عَهَدٌ عَهَدًا. And she gave you a part of her life, her heart. Nobody gives that to anyone else. وَوَقَتْكَ بِجَمِيعَ جَوَارِحَهَا. She used her entire, you know, body and all the faculties to protect you. She would not even eat something which might be harmful to you. You know, we hear about it, that even the mother who are, you know, smokers at all in pregnancy don't smoke. It might have an impact on the child. So the mothers basically are not only leaving things to nature, they actually take care that I shouldn't do something which will be harmful to the child. وَلَن تُبَالِي أَن تَجُوعَ وَتُطْعِمُكَ. And she didn't care whether she is hungry or not, but she will feed you. وَتَشْعَشَ وَتَسْقِيكَ. She might be thirsty, but she will give you water. She might not have proper, you know, covering for herself, but she will cover you. She might not be able to, put herself under a shadow, but she will be a shadow for you. She might spend nights where she is not sleeping for your sake. She will prevent you from the heat and the cold of the time. وَأَنْتَ لَا تُطِيقُ شُكْرَهَا إِلَّا بِعَوْنِ اللَّهِ وَتَوْفِيقِهَا. And you will not be able to fulfill, you know, your gratitude towards her except by asking for the help and tawfiq of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let me just, you know, share one more hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wa salam. For people like me and many others, we don't have our parents now. What can we do for them? And this is where, you know, it's not only the issue of doing dua, رَبِّ رَحَمُهُمَا كَمَا رَبَّيَانِ الصَّغِيرَ. You know, alhamdulillah, according to our tradition and culture, it has become part of our daily prayers in Qunut, which is a good thing. And this is a dua from the Quran itself. But besides that, the sixth Imam says that when a person, you know, lives this dunya, nothing continues. Basically, their record of their deeds have been closed. Except he says three things which will still continue and help them. Number one, صَدَقَةٌ أَجْرَاهَا فِي حَيَاتِهِ فَهِيَ تَجْرِي بَعْدَ مَوْتِهِ. If a person before dying, you know, initiates what is known as صَدَقَةِ جَارِيَةِ, a sadaqah which continues even after death, means the benefit of that continues. You see, sometimes we give sadaqah and donation for a very specific, you know, one-time issue, and it's done, and the person who needed it, you know, he fulfilled his need, and Allah will bless you for you 10 times. definitely. But then there is something you do that where the effect of that or the benefit of that is in a way continuing. And as long as it continues, even when you have died, the ajr and sawab will still be put in your record. You are not doing anything, but you initiated something. Now, suppose somebody didn't do anything. Can you do something like sadaqah jariyah for your marhum or marhuma? Yes. For your parents, you can do that. You can also do that and say that I'm doing this, you know, as a sadaqah jariyah for my parents or for my father or for my mother. And that also will be, continued as a process where, for example, you help in the process of an educational institution. As long as children are being, educated there, as long as that institution is there, the sadaqah jariyah, the sawab will continue. So anything like that which is going to continue. When you talk about, let's say, building of masjid, for example, as long as the masjid is there and people are using it, the ajr and sawab will continue. And many, many other things that you can do as far as the projects are concerned where you can initiate a process where the benefit will continue. So that's first thing. Number two, وَسُنَّةَ حُدًا سَنَّهَا فَهِيَ يُعْمَلُ بِهَا بَعْدَ مَوْتِهِ. Something that person has done. And other got encouraged with it and they continued that work. As long as people continue that, the ajr and sawab will continue. If you taught somebody how to read the Quran, for example, and that person then teaches somebody else, he will get the sawab, but you also will get the sawab. And this can also continue in as long as the process is going on. And the third one, the Imam says, وَوَلَدٌ صَالِحْ يَدْعُ لَهُ. And a righteous child of the person who has passed away, who is there and who is praying for them. And this is something which we have to keep in mind that, when we talk about the marhumin, yes, to remember them, to recite du'as and to pray for them. At least this is the least that we can do in order to help them, especially during their journey in the passage known as Barzakh.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the Limelight.
Due to increase in the Zionist regime's crimes against oppressed Palestinians in 2022, the resistant groups and the Palestinian Authority have asked the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The occupying Zionist regime has become so brazen that it regularly slaughters innocent Palestinians quite openly in front of their loved ones. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Middle East Monitor has more for us. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. Hamas released a statement recently marking the Human Rights Day, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. The Palestinian Islamic resistance movement Hamas said the world is making this day as Israeli regime continues to escalate its terror and systematic violations against Palestinians, including deliberate assassinations, land theft, siege and racial discrimination, and segregation. The statement went on to say that the day provides a good opportunity to shed light on the scale and gravity of the unabated Israeli crimes against Palestinians. The Hamas statement added, "It is also a suitable opportunity to remind the whole world of its responsibilities to take actual action to criminalize the occupying regime's violations and colonial settlers' terrorism, work on putting an end to them and prosecuting their perpetrator as war criminals and international courts of law." The movement further stressed that Israeli crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. Hamas further called on the United Nations and the international community to put an end to Israeli crimes in the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied city of Al-Quds and the West Bank, to end the unjust blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip and enable the Palestinians to defend themselves with all means possible, until ending the occupation and establishing an independent Palestinian state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital. Since the start of 2022, the Israeli regime military forces have murdered more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 Palestinian children. According to the United Nations, the number of Palestinians martyred by Israel in the occupied West Bank this year alone is the highest for the past 16 years. Incidents of sabotage and violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians and their property have become almost a daily occurrence throughout the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Wafa news agency has also covered the same story. Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates Riyad al-Maliki has handed over to the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, a file on the Israeli regime crimes committed against innocent Palestinians. During a meeting at The Hague, the Netherlands, with Karim Khan, the Palestinian Foreign Minister Maliki stressed that the State of Palestine continues to cooperate with the International Criminal Court, the ICC, and the staff of the Prosecutor's Office to submit all documented information that proves that Israeli military and civilian officials have committed serious and continuous crimes against innocent Palestinians. He stressed that all of these crimes fall within the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The top Palestinian diplomat stressed the importance of the ICC and its role in holding war criminals accountable in the light of the rise to power of the extremist cabinet of terrorist settlers who bluntly expressed their schemes that are based on field executions and forcible expulsion of Palestinians. The Palestinian minister said bringing the criminals before international justice will contribute to the protection of the Palestinian people and deter crimes against innocent Palestinians. Elsewhere in his remarks, he called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, prosecutor to pay a visit to Palestine and give priority to the administration of justice. Palestinian human rights advocates last year hailed the decision by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to affirm its full territorial jurisdiction over the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime is not a member of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, but Palestine was allowed to join back in 2015 and has since called for an investigation into Israeli crimes. The Hague-based court has already opened an investigation into possible war crimes by Israel in both the occupied West Bank and the occupied Gaza Strip. In 2021, the United Nations documented 2,934 grave violations against 1,208 Palestinian children in occupied Palestine and the Gaza Strip. The United Nations Human Rights Council, Human Rights Watch, and other international human rights organizations have charged the Israeli regime with apartheid in the past 2 years. Local and international human rights groups have condemned Israel's excessive use of force and shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians, at a time that mainstream media and Western powers turned a blind eye to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime against innocent Palestinians. Many believe the Israeli regime will continue with its crimes against Palestinians as long as it enjoys protection and patronage of the United States. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has more for us. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC, has called on the United Nations to set up a fact-finding mission to probe the recent fatal shootings of a Palestinian youth by Israeli military in the occupied West Bank. In a statement released recently, the Jeddah-based international organization held Israeli authorities fully responsible for this act. For the repercussions of assassinations and premeditated killings of Palestinians by Israeli troops, urging the United Nations and other concerned international bodies to establish a fact-finding mission to investigate circumstances surrounding the martyrdom of the 22-year-old Amar Mefler. It called on the international community, especially the United Nations Security Council, to fulfill its legal and political obligations, pressure the Israeli regime into stopping such criminal acts, holding the occupying Israeli regime accountable for all of its violations and racist policies, and provide international protection for the Palestinian people. Video footage widely circulated on social media sites showed an Israeli soldier holding Mefler in a headlock by a road in the town of Hawara, south of the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, on 2nd of December, as the two men tried to wrestle him away. The man then appears to strike the Israeli soldier before the trooper pulls out a handgun and shoots him several times at point-blank range as the Palestinian youth fell to the ground. Israeli military forces present at the scene prevented residents and ambulances from providing aid to the injured Palestinian youth, provoking clashes with the local population. The Palestinian Ministry of Health said Mefler had attained martyrdom for his critical wounds. The United Nations West Asia envoy, Tor Wennesland, said on Twitter that he was horrified by the latest assassination. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya said at the time that the criminal execution of the town of Hawara reflected the extent of organized racism being practiced by the Israeli military. Mohammad Shataya expressed his utter shock and anger over the heartbreaking video footage of Meffler being fatally shot at point-blank range by an Israeli soldier, saying that Israeli soldiers feel assured that they will not be held accountable for their crimes and atrocities, and this emboldens them to repeat such actions. He also urged the International Criminal Court, the ICC, at The Hague in Netherlands to quickly hold the perpetrators of this crime to account.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. The first point is with regards to the document on fundamental transformation that he, Mr. Mohsen Ejaei, the head of the judiciary, talked about. This document on transformation is one of the most progressive documents for change. First, it was prepared later. It was revised during the time of Mr. Raisi. Important points were added, and it was completed in that revision. So this document should be acted upon. The esteemed head of the judiciary is committed, and he follows up on things, but matters must be followed up on at different levels. Judges, staff, and managers must follow up on matters too. But based on the reports that I have received, some are not doing completely the things that one thinks should be done in this area. According to this document, a workforce should be trained. As has been frequently said, personnel need to be trained.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Action should be taken in accordance with this document. That is, the judiciary must not be passive. In the face of rumors, talk, opposition to it, and the like. There is a straight path in front of it, and it should follow and move along this path with strength. The judiciary should not be influenced by rumors, whether some people like what it has done and some people dislike it. This is the first recommendation. My second recommendation is that the issue of fighting corruption should be taken seriously. Corruption exists. Mr. Mohseni Ejei told me something good in one of these recent meetings. He said apparently this is what he meant, that they had decided to first fight corruption within the judiciary itself. Yes, that's a good action to take. It is not true to say that no corruption exists within the judiciary. Of course, the majority of judges are honest, noble, faithful, hardworking, and truly honorable people. But if there are 10 bad people in a group of 1,000 people, they can harm the rest of the group in terms of their reputation, in terms of work and the like. You have to look for these 10 bad people. However, the main task is to confront the structures that bring corruption.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.